Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, guys. Go. Though I am pretty sure that a few more people are going to show up. And before you step out, Sola, everybody, thank you, you know, for coming back. You know, we're excited that Sola's here. And back with us. Yeah, let's see. We don't
Thanks for the super pop, guys.
You've been gone a long time. The reason that I would start, even though I think there's a few more people coming, I went to a shul as a kid where, you know, people did not come on time. It was like a 3-hour service. So people would come for like the last, you know, hour and 15 minutes. They'd catch the kiddush and, you know, maybe the rabbi's speech if they were so inclined. So what the shul did is like they weren't getting a minyan in the beginning. You know, they would have 50, 60 men by the end, and 50, 60 women, but there was 4 or 5 people there at 9 o'clock when the service started. So they kept pushing it off another 10 minutes. They were sort of not on time, and so the service just started to drag, and nobody would come that much later every week. So what happened is, it just started, the synagogue basically started at the beginning at about 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. Then going later, and the people that came 2 hours late came 2 hours late after 10. So therefore, I would assume that people that want to be any later than this are expected to come halfway through, so I'm not going to sit around and make you guys wait. Instead, we're going to start talking about smells now. The smell of Torah. Yeah, smells. We're going to speak about the sense of smell. We're going to talk about the giving of the Torah and the smells that happened then. Yeah, what's the smell of Torah? It says that at Sinai, the Gemara in Shabbos writes that when God gave the Torah, with every word that came from his mouth, the entire world filled with sweet-smelling bisamim, spices. The whole world. That's what happened when God gave the Torah. What does that mean? What's the message? In fact, you know, the Chasam Sofer and others reported there's a minhag on Shavuos around the shuls and in people's homes to spread sweet-smelling spices and things around the house because of this. Because when the Torah was given, everything smelled delicious. And it's like, bizarre. Like, what does the smell have to do with it? I mean, it's nice. It's like a nice image that everything smelled good and there were flowers everywhere. But as we know, it's got to be more than that, right? Right, Tom Morris? So let's see if we can find out what it is. That's right. The rule generally is get as close as you can to Paul. So maybe if you can sit on top of his lap. That's right. I'm sure you got to pick them up with an ice pick. Fight off the ladies. In any event. Let's go in the following direction. We find there was a great woman named Esther, Queen Esther, whose real name, her birth name, the name she really was called is Hadassah. Hadassah. And in fact, we find other places in Torah literature that righteous people are referred to as Hadassah. As myrtle branches. Why is that? Well, I mean, you may have heard the famous medrash, which says there are 4 kinds of human beings. There are human beings that are like the etrog that has a beautiful smell and a beautiful taste. You can cook with it, you can make etrog chicken, etrog jelly, right? It's just delicious. So that's the etrog. Then there is the sort of person who has delicious smell, but no taste, and that is the myrtle. Then there is the lulav, which is the palm branch, you know, which, you know, we can eat parts of palm and things like that. They have a delicious taste. They have taste, but they have no smell. And then there's the sort of person who has no taste and no smell. That's the arava. The arava represents the wicked people. That's what it says. The Esther is a perfectly righteous one. And then the middle people are the ones that have Torah but no good deeds. That's taste but no smell. And smell represents a person with good deeds, but without the knowledge of the Torah. So smell represents deeds, action. That's already the first thing we know. The Ein Elio, or the Leon Shik, spoke about 100 years ago on the Agadic portions of the Talmud. He says that Esther is called Hadassah because she was a woman of action. That's what she stood for. She stood for her good deeds. In other words, she wasn't known necessarily for any great learning that she did. She wasn't a teacher in that way. She was an example of how to get up and act when it's time to act. So Esther's called Hadassah, and her name already hinted, that was her power. It was the power of sweet smell, which is ma'asim tovim, good actions. That's the Medrash, as explained by the Enelio. Okay. You know, so it's interesting, when the Torah was given, one wouldn't expect the message to be necessarily about good deeds. On Shavuot night, we don't go around visiting the sick. I mean, it's always good to visit the sick. But Shavuot is not even about studying Torah, right? I mean, the beginning of the Torah is about Torah. You would think it would represent taste, not smell. What is it about the giving of the Torah that made it that such delightful smells came into the world? Sorry?
Smell connects
to your neshama. Oh, you know, the Gemara says there's one of your five senses. This is the next thing we like to say. Unbelievable. The Gemara says of all the five senses, there is one chush, there's one smell that the neshama gets hana'am, gets pleasure from. And that is the sense of smell. And you gotta wonder, how is that a spiritual sense? What does it do for you spiritually? What's the experience? In other words, why is it more spiritual than anything else? The Maharsha and others explain that it's simply less physical. It's something that's harder to touch. It's something that's harder to sense. You have to think about that. Why is that with sight? Is that more physical, less physical? What is it about your soul that's awakened by smell? Before we answer these questions, talk about elephants. Elephants. The Gemara says, Haroa pil b'chalov. If you see an elephant in your dream, pilaos nasim. Wonders either have been done for you or will be done for you, it's ambiguous. That's if you see an elephant in your dream. Pile, right? Pilim b'chalom. If you see elephants, plural, in your dream, pile pilaos, wonder of wonders, will be done for you.
Wow.
It's awesome to see elephants in a dream. But why would we start from, right? In other words, I think the Gemara says these Gemaras that say all the things you see in a dream means if you didn't think about it the whole day. It says that about some of them. If it just pops up in your dream, right, then it's like an unbelievable sign. Wonders! But what does that have to do with an elephant? What is the wonder of the elephant? It's a giant animal. It is a massive animal. And yet still, we need to understand what's the wonder of the elephant. Okay, so let's understand what the word tellet means. Whenever you... Sorry?
Is there any correlation between... Pillows and a dream,
when
we dream,
obviously. That's probably the Gemara, man. That's one school of thought.
Insights.
You know, the simplest understanding is that the word peel, which is pillow, relates to pelle. So you're saying, you know, peel, which is elephant, relates to pelle, which is wonder. So that's the simplest, you know, understanding. But it needs a havan. Okay, so let's see about this. Sorry. There's a bracha that we say after we use the facilities. When a person goes to the bathroom, he makes a blessing, thanks God, who's rofechol basar, who cures all flesh, who mafli la'asov, and does wondrous things. Mafli is from Pella. And the Ramah in his famous, you know, gloss to Shulchan Aruch, towards the very beginning, the Ramah, the Ashkenazi major halachic decisor, the Moshe Isserus, also a great capitalist, who other works on that as well. So he says this. He says, the greatest power that exists, the greatest wonder is this, that a human being, you and me, I mean, it's an atom. It's a physical clod of dust of the earth, and you mix in a little bit of the breath of God. That's how the Torah describes it. It's a pretty good description. And suddenly you have a human being. A human being is physical and spiritual at once. The idea that something spiritual, the soul that you have in you, the part of you that's noble and good and kind and has the free will to sacrifice yourself in an altruistic way for what's right. That part of you could be connected to the other part of you that you're sometimes in contact with, that is just an animal. Your physical body is so remarkable, it's the ultimate pellet. And when we thank God for allowing our body to work, we remind ourselves what an incredible wonder it is that our soul can even ride in a body at all. Unbelievable. And that's what we're supposed to be thinking when we make the blessing. But Maflila, so it's a wondrous thing that a human being can exist with a soul and a body together. God blew the soul into the body through the nose. Mm-hmm. Interesting. It says that in the Torah. By Yibach Ba'apav Nishmas, he blew the soul into the body through the nose. So what happened? The elephant is an absolute example of health. The Gemara then says it's only great to see elephants in a dream if it is wearing a saddle. If it's not wearing a saddle or tied with reins, is another interpretation. The commentaries say wearing a saddle shows that it's under human control. You see, an elephant is quite simply a pellet. He's massive. He's the largest land animal that we know of. Tons and tons. We're talking car after car would have to be staffed, and he weighs like an 18-wheeler. Yeah. Many, many times, 20, 30 times. And the elephant can move in a day 10 times as fast as a human being. That's what I've read. An elephant can travel 10 times as far as a human being. I mean, its legs, just look at the legs of an elephant. Unbelievable. It doesn't have any of the sensitivity or the curvature that a human foot has, or really any other animal. It's like a tree trunk. The elephant is simply massive. And yet, it survives on its own at somewhat of a pellet. But for a human being with his superior intellect, with the part of him that's not an animal, to have that massive power of the elephant under his control, that's an example of power. That is an example of the wonder that is the power of the spirit to control a body. And when you take massive physical prowess and you can control it in the right direction, that's what Pele is. That's wonder. Another example we have in this Pele, this wonder, is the following story. It says in... The story comes up both in the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi, in three places. It comes up in the Babylonian Talmud, in the Nedarim and Nazir, and it's told also in the Talmud Yerushalmi to Nedarim. In the Jerusalem Talmud, there's one detail that's added. And the story goes as follows. It says that there was once a Nazir, a guy, you know, what a Nazir is a fellow who decides that for 30 days, he's not going to engage in the more physical things. It means he's not going to eat meat, he's not going to drink wine, he won't visit the graveyard, he's going to live a more spiritually exalted life for 30 days. At the end of that, he brings sacrifices and then he goes back to regular life and he shaves all of his hair. That's what a Nazir does.
Okay.
There was once, says Shimon HaTzadik, there was once this Nazir who was offering an Asham Nazir Tamei. You see, if the Nazir accidentally becomes impure during the time that he was not supposed to, so he's got to start over. And he brings the sacrifice and he starts over. It's considered a mistake. The fellow who did that is considered, you know, you don't want to eat from that sacrifice because it was a fellow who messed up. Shimon HaTzadik said there was one time that despite the fact that you're not supposed to eat from that sacrifice because the person wasn't on such a high spiritual level, I did so anyway. Because I saw this beautiful Nazir who was just finishing. He was going to shave his hair, and he had the most beautiful hair I ever saw. And I said, Beni, my son, what did you think? It says that his hair was flowing in his locks, and he just describes how beautiful his hair was. So he says, why would you want to destroy your hair? He says, I'll tell you something. I was a shepherd for my father. Yeah, he had lived in the south. I was a shepherd for my father, and I took the animals, you know, to get some water from the spring. And when I was there, I looked into the reflection that I saw in that water. The pochas ala yitzri, and my yitzar hara jumped on me, ambushed me and jumped on me. My passionate side started to tell me all the different sins that I could do with my incredible beauty. I'm sure we can all relate to that, you know? And immediately, I declared I am going to shave my hair in the most spiritually acceptable way, Agalecha chol shamayim, I will shave you off for spiritual purposes, and I'll become a nazir. A nazir is a fellow who separates himself from this world. Immediately we had, okay. So Shimon HaTzadik said, Kemoscha yarbu nozrei nazirus b'yisrael. Like you, I wish we had more and more people that would be prepared to become a nazir among the Jews. It is about you that God wrote in the Torah, Ish ki yafli lindor neder nazir lo hazir l'Hashem. It's about you that the Torah wrote when a person will mafli to make a neder, nazir lo hazir l'Hashem, a neder to become a Nazirite to Hashem. Now the word lehafli means to speak, believe it or not. Whenever the Torah says hafla, it means expression. The Rambam has a book, one of the 14 volumes of Maimonides. Rambam is called Hafla, and it has the laws of vows and the laws of nazir. Everything has to do with speaking. You see, human beings have the power of speech. It's something that's uniquely human. When we speak, we express the loftiest ideas that we know. The most spiritual part of ourselves we express through speech. And yet it comes out through a physical body. It comes out in sound waves. Speech is an example of the manifestation of Pella. The breath that a person has, that he's able to speak, is a manifestation of Pella. The wonder of the connection between body and soul. So this Shimon HaTzadik said to him, Ishki yafli lindor neder. You know, in the Yerushalmi it adds in that this Nazir was a redhead. That's what it says. Admoni in the Fe'enayim. Admoni is how King David and Esav. The only two people that understand this Admoni are Esav, yeah, the wicked brother of Yaakov, and King David. And it says that when King David was born, they were super concerned that he was a redhead. Because they believed that he looked very much like Esav. He was ruddy and he was, you know... that's what it says. It also says, interestingly, so I don't know, the Tishbi says that there's a Gemara that says, stay away from the tzurim, from the colored ones. And the simple understanding that everybody understands, Rashi and everyone else, is it means fakers. It means the people that on the one hand, the Gemara says, these the tzurim, the colored ones, yeah, the ones who are, you know, it means like colorful ones.
No, not even
people
also
say that. Tzurim, a faker. So it says, the Gemara says, She'osim ma'asa zimri. They behave like Zimri, who fornicated in public in front of all the Jewish people, who was a leader. They do a terrible act. Umevakshim sachar kepinchas. And they request reward as if they're Pinchas. They're doing something that's destroying the very fabric of society, and they consider themselves the saviors of society. It's usually like that. And they really believe it. I mean, you can't corner them. This sort of person, I've had experiences like this in my life. The person will tell a public lie. And so you'll show them, you know, well, that's not really what it says on page 45. It's the opposite. I had this. I mean, a fellow who says, you know, the halakha is as follows. It says that in this book. So after they went twice and went, I don't know, maybe you should correct it. Like, I'm not going to get up in public and correct you, but it does say the very opposite. And you just told the whole congregation the other way. So, I didn't say that. I don't know what you're talking about. You couldn't corner him. I mean, it was the premise. But I was there. I saw it. And you were there. You know. I don't know what you're talking about. The Tishbi, one of the early Rishonim, what Rishonim says, that requesting these people that are so wicked, they're such fakers, it doesn't mean fakers. It rather means people with orange hair. That's what he says. Redheads. He says they often have big tempers. They can be very difficult. He says it's better to stay away from redheads. Listen, if I didn't have red hair, I wouldn't even say it. But I figured I'd get away with it. You know, we'll explain it further. I mean, nobody should get too offended yet. There's a few other sources like this also that indicate that redheads are worth staying away from at all costs. And yet, that Asa can get right. We spoke to him. I just mentioned, yeah. No. So what is this business? What is going on? That this Nazir was a redhead. It says that they have very strong physical pull. Towards temporary, towards such things. He says, here's what it means. This Nazir was a fellow who was beautiful, who was very physically capable. When he looked into this water, he realized, physically I can excel in the wrong directions. I had better rein this in. So Shimon HaTzadik said to him, you are the sort of person who should become a Nazir. In fact, in the verse it says, Ishki Yafu. It talks about Peleg. It talks about the wonder that is the option of becoming a Nazir. As your Meir Arik and others explained, Ibn Ezra on the verse says, Zeh ha'adam hu Peleg. A person who can engage in his life in a way that he's prepared to limit things in the physical world is an absolutely wondrous creature. There is no animal that can choose to give up something that will be physically pleasurable for it for altruistic reasons. In other words, some animals are smart enough to sit quietly, right, while the other animal is picking the flies off of its back, like the monkeys do. They're even prepared to reciprocate, even after they got what they wanted. But they know that that's how it's going to have to work in their little, you know, group of monkeys. But for a human being who can just meet a stranger on the street and give him his lunch and walk away, that doesn't exist except among human beings. And therefore, the red hen is an unbelievable example for this guy to be. The fact that this guy was a redhead, in other words, he was somebody who was even more connected to the physical part of the world. He was somebody who was more prone towards anger and other
sensitivity,
proclivities. Nevertheless, he was able to control himself, and that made him a peleg. That's why it's emphasized that he was a redhead. Now, I don't know if it just means redhead. Admoni, when described about Esav, was like, his whole body was red. And they called him Adom because he acted like that his whole life. I'm not suggesting to anybody here that you not be friends or date redheads or anything like that. Because as Paul pointed out, and actually, it's the title of I think the first chapter. I go into this in a little bit of a different angle, but in the first chapter of the book on Chumash that you're going to see over the summer, I think the title of the chapter is Not All Redheads Are Evil. So in other words, and I can get away with it because my picture is going to be on the back cover. So people will realize that it's not meant to be any sort of racist remark. Or, whatever you would call it. It's not a race, but there you are. Now, what's wondrous then about the elephant as well is that he's the only animal with such a pronounced nose. It's unbelievable. I saw one of the Sfarim say this. That one of the things that's unique about the elephant is the size of his nose. Not only that, it's functional. The elephant is able to use his nose. And therefore, the Gemara says that the word peel, the word for elephant, is from the word pele. It's from the word wonder, because pele, as we said, means the wonder of the physical and spiritual coexistence. So the elephant is like this example of a pele. If you can control him, you've achieved pele. If you can't, it's a very bad sign for a dream to see an elephant without any kind of saddle or reins or under human control. But if the elephant is at all symbolic of an elephant in a circus under control, then it's like the best possible dream. Now, I want to tell you a little more about smell. Let's go back to the sense of smell. We mentioned in the beginning that at Sinai, when the Torah was given, every word that came out of God's mouth was accompanied, the Gemara says, by the world filling with delicious smelling things. And we wondered what the significance was. Okay. Smell, says the B'nai Yisrael and others, is the one sense that wasn't involved in the sin of Adam and Eve. So it says that they saw the tree, and they reached their hand down, and they didn't listen to God, and they listened to the snake, Ki shamata l'kol ishtecha Adam, because you listened to your wife's advice against my word. They ate it, that's a sense of taste. Everything but smell is not mentioned anywhere. Smell wasn't touched. Smell is the most spiritual of senses. It's the one where there's really no major sin. If the person doesn't smell, let's say they avoid smelling, idol worshippers things. But in other words, we don't have the same sort of draw with almost anything else. A person is cautioned by the Torah so heavily not to follow his eyes. Don't follow your eyes. Don't follow them. Don't follow your heart and your eyes. They'll drag you the wrong direction. Your eyes first see somebody and your heart starts to want it, and then you're finished. I mean, you and I must know that you can really see a movie about just about anything. And being that your heart is a muscle, you can cry at anything. And if you don't give them the example before, just because it's the last time, it was like, what was it, 3 years ago or so? 2-3 years ago? That my wife and I went, after a long time, we decided we're going to go see the movie Up. A Disney movie called Up. It's Disney, Pixar, one of these animated things. We went to theater, we got the kids to sleep, and we were at my parents' house in California, raced out to make it there. And we're sitting there, and at the very beginning of the movie, there's sort of this story that's shown in pictures. of the life, like very briefly, of the life of this couple who, as little kids, they kind of fell in love as like less than 10 years old. And you sort of see that they grow older and they get married and they start to decorate a room hoping that children will come, and they're watching her stomach and they're sitting there and no children are coming. And you watch them in the pictures just slowly growing old together in this empty house, and eventually they take down everything from the bedroom. And, you know, it's like a very, very sad story, right? They don't exist. I want to remind you. These are not real people. Right? There's no such person. Now, my wife was sitting next to me absolutely in tears because there was good music. And listen, the only reason I wasn't in tears is because I was biting my tongue so hard and thinking about, like, mass genocide or something. Whatever I can do, you know? Baseball players, anything to keep my mind up. I can't cry in a movie. I can't be seen like this. You understand? In other words, the reality is that we really can cry over people that don't exist. In an animated movie, I mean, even if they did exist, they would be, you know, like a perfectly circle head. But the answer is that the heart is a muscle, and you can make it cry at anything if you press the right buttons. You can't follow your eyes. What people hear, the way that people are persuaded. The Torah is very clear. You may not listen to people that are trying to tell you the wrong things. The greatest sin, we all know what it wrecks in families and societies and friendships. Lashon hara, I mean, through speaking. The desire that people have when it comes to the sense of touch, when it comes to eating, these are things that we all know. You know, not people like me that are super spiritually elevated. It's funny, why isn't this close? But, you know, we all understand that you can be tremendously drawn. I've really never heard of somebody in the years that I've been teaching who's come to me and said, like, Rabbi, I just can't deal with this. There's these Hare Krishna guys who live near me, and they have this delightful smelling things, and I can't stay away from them. You just don't hear that. The sense of smell is the most elevated one. And yet, I found in the Yaros Devash, he says something amazing. He says, the sense of smell is the only sense. We mentioned in the beginning also that the Talmud says that your soul has a special pleasure from smell. Listen to this one. He says, smell is the only sense that has absolutely no value in terms of perfecting yourself. There's nothing spiritual you can achieve through smell, really. As opposed to every other sense, where there is massive spiritual benefit to be able to listen or speak and ask questions, right? Or experience things. He says, smell is something that has the least possible impact. Now, while it's true that anything that you have in your life, you can make a blessing on, and you can appreciate it, smell is the least significant one. And it goes through that a little bit in depth. The Yaros Devash, Yonasan Eifshitz, 1700s. Remarkable, really. Seems like almost the opposite of what we're saying. But the truth is, we mentioned before, that when it came to the Hadas has only smell, because smell represents good deeds. You see, what's good deeds? Good deeds are actions that one does within the physical world that take on spiritual significance. So in other words, you can be eating something, or you can be eating something and it can be a mitzvah. It simply depends what the context is. If you're eating it so that you can have the strength to do more good deeds, then the eating itself becomes a mitzvah and you go to heaven for it. If you're having a meal and you include the poor with you, then that eating becomes a mitzvah. Conversely, in other words, what I need to say before I even continue is that the sense of smell represents good deeds, because as we said before, the sense of smell is the one that really isn't touched as much by this world. On the other hand, there is nothing that you can necessarily do naturally with smell that is directly tied to anything spiritual. It is the least connected to spirituality of all your senses. But because of that, it's the one with the most spiritual potential. The things that are cut and dried mitzvahs, all, right? You know, almost all mitzvahs have some physical part of them that is super important. And sometimes we almost wonder, it almost sounds silly. So for example, when we learn halachas of anything, whether they're Torah commandments or rabbinic commandments, we sometimes think, like, what's with all the details? Who doesn't it border down to, like, what your intention is anyway? And it's a very big mistake that was heavily influenced by, I believe, Christianity. where the physical has sort of become totally insignificant and evil, and like the more spiritual you are, the more you kind of distance yourself from physical things. And it's all about the ideas that you're thinking, and the holy guy that goes away in a cave and really thinks a lot. But really, we understand the very opposite to be true. That the pella, the wonder that is you and me, is the fact that we're both physical and spiritual. We don't even talk of ourselves as a soul. We say every day, Elokai, my God, Neshama Shenatata Bitahuri, the soul that you gave me is pure. Now who's talking? Obviously not the soul. So in other words, we see ourselves as a mixture of body and soul. Just like I can talk about my body, I can also talk about my soul. It would be a mistake to think you're only a soul. Now, while it's true that you should only be a soul, and you should focus on your body as something distant from you and your soul as who you really are, nevertheless, we know that in the world to come, you will be a body and a soul together. The Kabbalists are very clear about this, the Ramban is clear about this, because if you elevate your body through good deeds, it also becomes spiritual, and that's what you're here for. You're here to do good deeds and good things, and take the physical things that are distant, that are annoying, and use them to be holy. The Medrash talks about, on the verse, Sheker HaFeim, the Hevel HaYofi, that beauty and grace are, you know, false and meaningless. That this talks about Sarah Imenu, who was so beautiful. That she took, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about this, that what Sarah was successful in doing is taking her incredible beauty and charm and using it to bring people closer to Hashem. Mm-hmm. In other words, she was able to make people feel comfortable. She was able to reach people that might not have given her a second glance had she come across as a frumpy housewife. And instead, she really came across as somebody beautiful and charming, and she knew how to speak to people. And it is stupid, and it is silly. But you have to know how to use the silly and stupid things as well. Koheles. The book of Koheles begins and says it is all totally frivolous. It is all futile. Hevel Havolim. And you know when we read Koheles, we read it on Sukkot, which is the time of our joy. We get up in the shul. If any rabbi were to get up and paraphrase the book of Koheles on Sukkot in the shul, he would be fired. Stand up and say, you know, life is completely meaningless, guys. I look all around, I see people going here and there. What do they get anyway? Everyone's miserable. Everyone's like, what are you doing? It's a bar mitzvah, it's a wedding, what are you talking about this? On the happiest day of the year. So some commentaries understand that because it's such a happy time, we have to remind people, you know, not to get too carried away. However, there are others who say more. And I think, you know, I side with the others. I think it works like this. I have friends to this day who are adults. They are productive. They have jobs. They have relationships. And they are completely obsessed with things like hockey and baseball. To the point that when the New York Yankees win a game, they are exuberant. And when they lose, they are really, really sad. It makes them sad. There are 162 games in a year. The best teams have won something like 110, which means that 52 times a year they are in a funk, because a baseball team of players who, if they were all traded today to the other team, then they would just not care anything about those guys. And if the team changed their name, they wouldn't care, or the uniform. Unless I guess they moved from one tent to another, then they'll finish with them. But sort of an irrational thing to be so connected to. And we all have our own things that we just are completely sold on. You know what you have to do to somebody who's so into this that he grows depressed or super excited with a win or a loss of a baseball team? You need to sit him down and shake him. Maybe offer him a few years of therapy. And tell him, but he needs the message. It's just stupid. It's just some guy hitting a ball. It's not that important. And you know what? Once he really gets that message, you know, there's a beautiful world. There are mountains. There are waterfalls. There's penguins. There's all this good stuff. Ice cream. What are you doing? There's other things. When he learns that, then he can go to a baseball game too. And he can enjoy himself. When you have it in the right context and you realize how silly it is, you can use it well. But as long as you've built it up to something more than it is, then it's a serious problem. It's an addiction, and it's something that needs to be dealt with. And therefore, there's no problem being, I don't know, a crazy Butler fan, provided that you have your life in control. It's a small college. Tom will be happy to give a speech afterwards about Butler University.
Ivy League school in the Midwest.
Ivy League in the Midwest, yes. The most high. No, it really exists. There's really an Ivy League in the Midwest.
The most hype school in Israel.
Yeehaw. Now, that's a new thing that but what I want you to know is that only when you know that the insignificant things are truly insignificant can you truly enjoy them. It is the time of your joy when you have real perspective. Those of you who have ever either suffered from an addiction, God forbid, and broken away from it, or ever gotten out of a situation that was really unhealthy, and had the perspective to look back on it and say, wow, I can only be happy now that I realize that was really bad. So when we can be told, you know, running after the physical in this world just won't do it for you, it actually makes you happy. It actually teaches you how to use it. It is only when you can give your money up for the right things that you can grow wealthy. So we're told that to give charity and give money up is actually the way to grow wealthy. Because you cannot truly appreciate something unless you are prepared to take a step away from it. And when you can do that, you can truly appreciate it. We are told very strongly in the Torah that husband and wife need time apart as well, because you cannot appreciate things that you have no perspective about where they fit. If the physical intimacy between spouses is so important that they can never let it go, then they have a serious problem. There needs to be more to your life. And then that can find its place as one of the most enriching and fulfilling mitzvahs in the world. As with everything. So the sense of smell has come to represent good days in the sense that really these are things that are not necessarily spiritual. But if properly applied, they can be super spiritual. At the end of Shabbos, we make Havdalah. And the Shulchan Aruch in Reish Tzadi Vav 296 says, Seder Havdalah. The order of Havdalah is Yayin. First you make the butter, I guess. Bisamin. So one starts with the Yud, one starts with the Beis. Bisamin, which is the spices. Right? You start with the wine in the right hand, the spices in the left hand, and then you switch them. Unless you're lefty, but right, make the blessing on the spices. Then the candle, the Ner, that's a Nun. And then Hagol. And then the blessing of, thank you God, you know, who separates between holiness and the mundane. The simanech, and your simen, shall be, the way to remember this, Yavneh. Yayin, besamen, nehem, havdala. Yavneh. Okay. When the Jewish people were experiencing the destruction of the temple, they asked the Roman general, give us Yavneh v'chachamah. Please give us Yavneh. We'd like a chance, even though we're losing Jerusalem, to have one city where we can study Torah. And in fact, a great amount of Torah and a great amount of the Talmud came out from what was put together in Yavneh. The oral Torah is filled with stories about Karen and Yavneh, when they got there, and what they taught. You see, when you're leaving something holy and you're going into the physical world, you're going out of the spiritual Shabbos, Havdalah, which is Yavneh, is a very similar thing to the historical experience of saying, I know we're losing Jerusalem. I know we're going from a place where we have our own land, with the holiness of a temple in Jerusalem, with God's divine presence among us. I know we're losing that. But let us stay connected to it. And that was through Yavneh. It was an opportunity for them to maintain some connection, to not lose everything. So too, when Shabbos is finished, we want to stay connected to the Shabbos. We don't want to lose that. And you'll notice, by the way, that one of the most seriously difficult things for any person who's studying in a yeshiva or a seminary or even on their own is to study something about last week's parsha or the previous holiday that you just did. If somebody comes in the day after Shavuos and says, guys, I want to teach you about Shavuos. You say, come on, Rabbi, you're killing us here. When you go to a Malava Malka, and the guy gets up and speaks about the previous week's parsha, people roll their eyes. We're excited about the new thing, right? You have to realize, that's part of it. We just want to shed. There's a part of us that just wants to bolt, like a little child running out of school. Just wants to bolt away from the spiritual experience. But the truth is that one of the greatest things you could possibly do after a Shabbos is sit down on Saturday night and write over some of the Torah you thought about Shabbos. If the rabbi said something in shul that you still remember, to write it down. To connect and say, here's like something that I actually achieved something, and there's some way that I can bring it into my life. You should be prepared after the holiday to write over some of the Torah you had, to think about one of the things that you learned. I mean, number one, that's how you have stuff for next year. You know, for your Shabbos table one day, it's important to have some things to say and teach the people that are there. And there's really no such thing as a Jewish meal without somebody offering some words of Torah or something. You've got to have something to say. But more importantly, to be able to take from them, we do that, it says, to make us feel less bad about what we're losing, because it's very sad. We smell something. Because smell makes you feel less bad. Okay, now I just want to tell you, if we were feeling bad for no reason, then that would make sense. But in other words, if somebody, God forbid, you know, breaks your leg, right? Imagine this. And I've actually seen this with children sometimes. But imagine this, somebody comes, you know, over to you in the street, breaks your leg, whatever. And then someone else comes running over, and that person says, you know, I'm so sorry, I lost my mind momentarily, I really feel bad. And another person comes over without inquiring about you, she starts to tell the person, please don't feel bad. It tears me up inside that you feel so bad. Wait a minute. Of course they should feel bad. They walked over to the person with a crowbar and broke their leg. If the Shabbos is leaving and we're truly experiencing spiritual loss, so what's the point of smelling something to feel good? You know why? Because this must help remind us the sense of smell is all about the fact that we're a body and a soul together. That's where the soul came in. And in fact, even more fascinatingly, when a person has died and they need to identify the body, so the halacha is that you can only claim to identify a body if the nose is present. The nose has to be there. Everything else, and I want you to know something. Watch this. I'm going to turn around for a second, and I want you to tell me if you can describe the features of my face. If somebody came and said, describe Rabbi Schaff, describe his nose, what color are his eyes? Now, you just looked at me for an hour. If you saw me walking down the street, you would know, that's him, that's the guy. And you can't tell me one detail about my face? Here and there. Your friends, you can tell. The quality of being able to recognize something is a remarkably human quality. It's something that's not computerized, and even animals have a connection to it, but it's not quite the same. Hakara, which is like awareness, is something different than knowledge. The Rambam says you've got to know Leida Ulahaki, you've got to know and recognize God. One of those two things. You see, you know, I have something that my trusty friend over here, just to illustrate this. I've used this once before, but it was a different one last time. If I step in front of a computer, right, that recognizes my face, and then a minute later I step in front with the nose, it has no idea who I am. Now, all of you know who I am. Human beings have a quality called hakara. You can kind of look at something and know it. And we're told that that's tied together by the nose. If it wasn't for the nose, you wouldn't have it. It's something uniquely human. In other words, like we said before, the sense of smell represents the fact that you are a pella, you're a wonder, you're a mix of physical and spiritual. And you have one sense that is most spiritual, and that is your sense of smell. And it awakens things inside of you that no other sense does. But, really, there's very little on the surface that is spiritually accomplished by smell. You hear Torah, you talk Torah, you engage in the world with all kinds of mitzvahs. What do you do with smell? And that, we said, very simply. That's exactly the point. The fact that it is a purely physical thing is what makes it the area of good deeds. When the Torah was given, the whole world filled with sweet-smelling things. Because you might have thought, that the Torah coming from heaven to earth was about some kind of a spiritual revelation, where people are now supposed to go hide away and study. Not to have families. Not to hug children. Not to help the people they see on the street. And that would be a devastating mistake. So every time that God said another word, the world filled up again with sweet-smelling things. Esther was called Hadassah. It was a time of action. It was a time when they couldn't see God. They weren't understanding all kinds of deep things. They couldn't understand a thing. In fact, on her holiday, we get so drunk because we don't want to be busy thinking about stuff. We want to remember that in the physical things that we see in our life, we can find incredible spiritual meaning. That's what smell is about. And that's why Mordechai's name, by the way, also, Gemara says that Mordechai is an acronym for Miradachi, which is a sweet smelling spice. Listen to this one. Haman, who was the villain over there. So his name, Hey Mem and Nun, is 95. And one of the most disgusting smelling things in the whole world was called Chelba. Galba. In the Ketores, there were... This is going to get unbelievable. I'm talking about the Chelba for a reason. We're going to get somewhere very amazing with this. The Chelba was part of the Ketores, which is the incense in the temple, that they mixed together. And one of the things didn't smell good. The 11th one, the Chelbana, didn't smell good, but it made everything more potent and more sweet smelling. Haman, who was the wicked guy, right, actually did some good in this world. It wasn't his choice. But it says that the grandchildren of Haman learned Torah in Bnei Brak. He had grandchildren who learned. And I saw somebody ask for Chaim Kanievsky. They said, why? What did he do to deserve? Imagine telling you that Hitler had religious grandchildren. I mean, why would he deserve to have people convert to Judaism? And so it says that Haman deserved that because ultimately through him, the Jewish people got to a very wonderful spiritual state. In other words, to even be able to see in the wicked God and the massive challenges that there is something that can be good from that and taken from that. It's something that's a lot easier to see several thousand years afterwards. You don't tell it to the person who's experiencing it at that moment, you know? But you do imbibe that fragrance. And you recognize that that can smell delicious if mixed with the right ingredients. And that was Haman. It's all about smell. But then listen to this. Let's get back to Shavuos. It says in the Gemara that when the Torah was given, the angel said, Moshe, we don't think you deserve the Torah. And Moshe said, yes, we do. So God says, Moshe, grab onto my throne and answer that. So Moshe said, very well. Do you have a father and mother? Do you ever get jealous? So look at the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments says don't kill. If you never get jealous, you're not going to want to kill anybody. If you don't have a father and mother, there's no one to honor. You never went to Egypt. We went to Egypt. And it says the angels all said, you're right, Moshe. And they gave him gifts. And it lists one of the gifts. It says the gift of the Satan, the devil, Satan, was the Ketores, was the incense of the temple. That was the gift that Moshe got. He learned that the Ketores cures people and stops plagues, as we see later in the Torah. Now, the Sfarim asked the following. You know, an angel, and it's really another class we have to give on the whole topic of angels, but ultimately an angel is a messenger of God who doesn't have his own identity. There's not a fellow named Jeff who also was told, make it rain. The angel is the power of rain. So an angel can only have one mission, because he is that mission. The formative power of the seed that causes the baby to grow, or the grass to grow, is the Malach. The Rambam writes this explicitly in section 2 of Moreh Luch. So in that case, what gift can an angel have to give you? Because Moshe was so convincing, they gave him gifts. What did he, you know, believe it or not, I happen to have an Ellis Island commemorative mug. What did he give mug? What would they have? He says, you know what they have? They have, one of the ones that's like half a mug and it says, you know, they were so expensive, I can only afford that. Very curious, right? What are the angels going to give? You know what they could give? They could give themselves. That's all they have. In other words, if it says that the Satan, or Moshe Shapiro explains this in that Gemayim, if the angel gave Moshe, the Satan, the Satan, gave Moshe the Ketores, it means that he showed Moshe that what I'm all about is the Ketores. That's who I am. I am the incense. You're getting me. You're getting my message. How is the angel the incense? What does that mean? How is he the incense, this Satan? Because the incense tells you that even the smelly stuff, if you mix it in right, it smells delicious. The Satan is part of the grand scheme of things. We were created to do good things. But there has to be balance. It's only really worth something when you challenge yourself. So we were given a physical side that's very heavy, and the satan pulls us in that direction. And then we were given a spiritual side that is so powerful that it pulls us in the other direction, the Yetzer Tov. We have a passion to do good. Every human being is looking for meaning and goodness. Some win the battle one way, some win the other way. But Satan is standing there doing his mission, saying, sin, sin, sin. But all he wants you to do, if he would have an identity, would be to beat him. To mix him in and make him smell sweet. That's who he is. That's the message of the Torah. The message of the Torah is that we, once we have the Torah come from heaven to earth, have learned that we have all the sweet-smelling stuff we need. We can make anything else smell delicious. If you have any part of your psyche, any part of your personality, anything in you that you think would drag you over to the physical side, remember about the Nazir from the south. You know, the Marashah that I pointed out, and it comes up many places in Talmud, the south always represents wisdom. The menorah in the temple was placed in the south. The Tzafon in the north always represented the Yetzer Hara. It always represented the, you know, the Hatzfuni. One of the words for the Yetzer Hara is the northern one. That's where the wealth was. But the truth is that if you can have both, if you can connect in to this southern Nazir, then he can reach up north and grab everything he needs and pull it in under his control, and it will be the Pella of the elephant. The absolute wonder that is the elephant. A massive, massive physical animal. If you see one in a dream and it's under your control, then wonders will be done for you. Then you will live a life of wonder. You will live a life where you can include all of these physical things, all of the distant things, into incredible holiness. And you know, just to conclude, is a minute to eat dairy on Shavuos. And so that's what I'm saying, the Be'er Heitzer brings this, that this is based on the following measures. The early minute was to first eat dairy and then eat meat during one meal. Clear the table and then eat meat. Start with a dairy course and then go to, which is very strange. You have to make two different meals. But it says that when the angels came to visit Abraham, they ate meat and milk together. The Medrash says, every little school child knows this. And you don't know this, that Moses said that to the angels. And they said, you're right, you deserve the Torah. When they came to Abraham, it says he fed them chema, v'chalav, and bakar. So they ate meat and milk together. That's what it says in that Medrash Shochar Tov, one of the earliest Medrash. And so on Shavuos, when we celebrate that we got the Torah, not the angels. So we specifically eat a meal that will have meat and milk in it that are separated the right way to show that we have a connection to Torah. That we know how to keep it. But it's a little deeper than that. We want to remind ourselves that if we learn how to engage in the Torah, it's not true you can't eat meat and milk. You can. You just have to know how. The angels have no concept of this. They cannot elevate the physical. They have spiritual forces. We are not spiritual forces. We have tremendous spiritual power inside of us. And we have tremendous physical capability. Don't turn either one of them off. It's not healthy. Connect to both of them. Just make sure that the head stays on top of the body and the rest of the body is saddled underneath. I want to thank everybody so much for coming. I want to also let you know that on Shavuos night, you know, we're going to have a couple things, but the one thing that you all need to know about is that starting at 11 o'clock, we're going to have learning the whole night here on Shavuos. It's going to be a blast. And we're going to have a nice time. Before that, there's also an option if you'd like to join us. You know, the learning all night is free and it's open to everybody. The meal that we're having before is not free. It's a nominal cost. I think it's 65 shekels, I think, something like that. I'll check for you. But if anyone wants to join us for that, then that should be really nice. We'll have a nice catered meal here. It'll be delicious. We'll be singing and enjoying the holiday. And also Thursday night this week, there's an event with like something like 20 kinds of cheesecake and 20 kinds of wine and all kinds of fun stuff. So you should know about all these things because they're all going to rock. And I want to thank you guys all for coming tonight and wish you a wonderful Chag Sameach. And is that light bulb out or was it never turned on? I was noticing.